Today is May 9th, 2008, and this is the Apple Weekly Report, episode number 125, a podcast for the Mac Observer. I'm Jeff Gamet, morning editor for TMO.
And I'm Brian Chaffin, editor-in-chief. To get the full story on anything we cover in this podcast, you can visit macobserver.com/AWR. And if you'd like to comment on or question anything about the show, shoot us a note at AWR@macobserver.com. I had to blow up my gun.
That brings a smile to my face every week.
That's good. That's good. How are you doing this week, speaking of weeks?
You know, I'm doing good. I spent last night at the Mac user group up in Boulder, always a fun group of people to hang out with. It was a blast.
And yeah, Boulder's a good place. I can only imagine that the mug there is also a good thing.
It is. It's actually a really good mug. And so I'll just send out an invitation. Anyone, if you're in Boulder on the second Thursday of the month, drop by and tell me hi.
Sweet. And I'm sure the folks at the Cat Mac in Austin would want me to say that that you should go by there too or something.
You know, I should at some point just make a trip and go down there.
Yeah, you should. And yeah. I'll just clip a little bit.
Okay, that sounds great.
But just a little bit.
Okay. Well, you know, if you do too much, then it's just being decadent.
This is true. This is true. Speaking of decadent, we have a decadently delicious sponsor this week.
We do. Smile on My Mac Software.
Yep. And what's the product that they're specifically sponsoring us?
That would be PageSender.
And PageSender, that's a fax software.
It is. Yeah. So for those that are not in the know, this is like the best fax software for your Mac that you can get. And I say that from experience, not from marketing speak that's been fed to me. It's far superior to what you can get with a built-in faxing software that's on your Mac. It totally rocks.
That's awesome. Now, I am less familiar with it than you are, so I'm going to leave this to you. Why do you like it so much?
I like it because it's reliable. It's easy to use. It interfaces with Address Book really well. It does a great job of actually tracking all your faxes, too. So you can actually use it for auditing, which is great, because if you have to fax even, you know, just a few times a month, being able to keep track of what went out when, what came in when, so that you know just everything that's going on with all of your faxing, that's just a great feature.
Well, sure.
And it works with the email fax services, too.
Aha.
Yeah.
So. Also good.
Also
good. And you can receive faxes using your fax modem, right?
That is correct, yeah.
And it will automatically filter spam faxes. Now, have you actually encountered that?
I have not, but that's because I don't have to fax on a regular basis anymore. So I actually don't have a modem hooked up to my computer unless I'm going to send out a fax. So that really does a lot to block spam.
Well, I wonder if fax spam is even as common as it was, say, in the mid-90s.
You know, probably not, but it's still out there. So,
sure.
You know, being able to block it sounds like a good thing to me.
Fair enough. And I know that you can attach PDF documents when you send a fax out too, so like you don't have to actually incorporate them into the fax separately.
Right, which is nice. You know, you don't have to build everything together. I also like that you can build your own customized cover pages.
Oh, that's handy.
Yeah, you know, so that, I mean, that's really great for a business, but you know, if you're just using it for personal use, okay, well, just think of all the fun you can have with custom pages.
Well, when I fax stuff, I always want to have a cover page. So, I mean, you know, being able to do it right there in the old Mac would be a handy dandy thing.
It is, and you can have multiple cover pages. So, you know, if you're doing different things, it's easy just to drop in the cover page that you need in the context of whatever it is you're doing.
Right. So the package costs $39.95. That's the full retail version of PageSender.
Well, that's a sweet deal.
Well, actually, that's the regular price.
Well, it's still a sweet deal.
It is a sweet deal. And you can get a fully functional demo at smileonmymac.com/PageSender. Go figure.
Yeah, how about that?
Cool. All right. Well, thanks to the folks at Smile on My Mac for sponsoring us this week. And we ask you, the listener, to definitely check out PageSender because these guys are definitely helping paying the cost of producing and distributing the show.
They are. And you know, I give their app 2 thumbs up. And I say that not just because they're a sponsor, but because I'm a happy user, too.
Sweet.
Oh, yeah.
And with that, the news.
The iPhone machine is in full swing with carrier deals for over 20 new countries announced just this week. Apple's lawsuit Express dropped off a couple of passengers. Steve Jobs isn't making as much as he used to. Microsoft bailed out on its Yahoo takeover. And NBC cozied up with the ever-popular Zune. And this week's quick tip, viewing multiple images with Quick Look.
The iPhone will be moving into more than a score of new markets around the world in 2008, including 10 markets serviced by Vodafone. The global carrier has penned a deal with Apple and claims it will be offering the iPhone in Australia, the Czech Republic, Egypt, Greece, Italy, India, Portugal, New Zealand, South Africa, and Turkey before the end of the year. Vodafone is being clear on which countries it will offer iPhone service packages, but it isn't offering many more details of those packages. So far, the company hasn't offered exact launch dates, iPhone pricing, or information on how much service packages will cost. Vodafone's announcement also marks the first time Apple has broken its one carrier per country rule because Telecom Italia will also be offering the iPhone in Italy.
And America Mobile announced on May 7th that it will be distributing the iPhone in Latin America before the end of the year, further expanding Apple's global smartphone reach. Like Vodafone, America Mobile... Okay, I'll stop for just a second and apologize to anyone that actually speaks Spanish. Aside from English, the only foreign languages I've spoken over the years include COBOL, Fortran, and Pascal. So apologies up front. All right. Like Vodafone, America Mobile only stated that it has signed a deal, but did not offer any other details. And along with America Mobile, Vodafone, and Telecom Italia, Rogers also announced a few days ago that it will partner with Apple in Canada. Apple's iPhone is already available in the United States, United Kingdom, Ireland, France, Germany, and Austria, and the company plans to sell 10 million units by the end of 2008.
The French cell carrier Orange already has a deal to offer Apple's iPhone in France, and now it looks like the company is in talks to expand that coverage into Poland and Spain. CFO Gervaise Pellissier confirmed that Orange is negotiating with Apple to bring the iPhone to both countries, and he added, quote unquote, among others, how mysterious. Michel Pellissier's confirmation means that Orange has its eye on even more countries in the EU and hopes to control a larger part of the iPhone market. He did not state which other countries Orange is negotiating for, nor did he say how far along the Spain and Poland talks have progressed.
And if a leaked internal email proves to be legit, AT&T is prepping for what could be a late June iPhone launch, just as it did last year. Apparently, the cell carrier is suspending employee vacations between June 15th and July 12th for, quote, an exciting summer promotional launch, unquote. The internal email adds, quote, to ensure proper staffing during this period, sales personnel planning to take approved time off are encouraged to schedule their vacations before June 15th or after July 12th to participate in the heavy selling period, unquote. AT&T issued a similar notice to employees last year prior to the original iPhone launch to help ensure proper staffing during the rollout event and following days. And while a supposed leaked email isn't proof that Apple is preparing to release new iPhone models, it does add to the growing collection of rumors that point to a June launch.
In other words, you know, a blind bat could read between the lines there. Apple's iPhone developer program has moved beyond the confines, as the case may be, of the United States and is now open to software developers in other countries, too. The change means that iPhone and iPod Touch application coders from around the world will now have the opportunity to distribute their programs through Apple's App Store when it launches at the end of June. The international expansion came quietly and was presented only as a change in wording on the details page on Apple's iPhone developer program website. Instead of stating that the program is open to developers in the U.S., the page now states, quote, the iPhone Developers Program will initially be available to a limited number of developers during the beta period, unquote. At least one iPhone coder in the UK has already successfully applied for the program, according to the unofficial Apple weblog. Apparently, the developer paid a £59 fee and was accepted into the program. The expansion of the iPhone Developer Program is good news for coders and ultimately for end users, since now there is a chance there will be even more iPhone and iPod Touch applications available when Apple officially opens the App Store.
And Apple may have finally resolved a 2006 class action lawsuit that alleged the company misrepresented sparking issues some of its iBook and PowerBook power adapters exhibited. The company agreed to pay qualifying Mac owners between $25 and $79, that's U.S. dollars. Estimates put the number of potentially qualifying Mac owners in the neighborhood of 2.3 million. The agreement earned preliminary approval in the San Jose U.S. District Court on March 24th, but is awaiting final approval on September 8th. The class action suit claimed that the laptop power adapter, quote, dangerously frays, sparks, and prematurely fails to work, unquote. Apple issued a recall for about 570,000 adapters in 2001 and offered free replacements after receiving reports of overheating issues. Once the final settlement is approved, Apple will offer cash payments to qualifying customers that purchased Apple-branded or third-party power adapters to replace faulty units.
Apple agreed on Thursday to offer a $45 Canadian credit to Canadian residents. That's like $3,000 U.S. these days, Jeff?
I think that's just about right, yeah.
Anyway, to those Canadian residents that bought a first, second, or third generation iPod before June 24th, 2004, the proposed agreement came in response to two lawsuits that alleged iPod batteries prematurely wore out and failed to maintain a charge, according to Montreal's The Gazette. The suits from Inez Lindsay and Bradley Waddell both claimed that after only a year of use, the iPod batteries ran for about 3 hours instead of the 8 hours Apple advertised. Apple's settlement will cover both cases and is awaiting final court approval on June 20th. Eligible iPod owners will be able to use their credit at Apple's online store in Canada and could apply to as many as 80,000 Canadian residents.
Apple CEO Steve Jobs topped the Forbes Top Paid Tech CEO list in 2006, but dropped to number 11 in 2007. Choosing to propagate their long history of using fantasy math, Forbes said Mr. Jobs' earnings in 2006 hit $646 million, a figure that blithely ignores the fact that the restricted stock grants that comprise all those millions were vested over a period of several years and were not compensation merely for 2006. Be that as it may, Mr. Jobs' salary topped out at a comparatively meager $14.6 million in 2007, according to Forbes. A substantial portion of Mr. Jobs' 2007 earnings also came in the form of company stock, which is worth far more than his $1 salary. Mr. Jobs wasn't the only tech name to drop off the top 10 list in 2007. Former Yahoo CEO Terry Semel lost his ranking along with his job, and Dell CEO Michael Dell dropped down to number 36.
Microsoft walked away from the table and withdrew its unsolicited bid for Yahoo over the weekend after attempting to sweeten the pot with a new $46 billion offer. CEO Steve Ballmer said, and translating, that is, his company has no plans to pursue a hostile takeover attempt either. Mr. Ballmer said, quote, and we continue with our translation. Supervision, man, I'm telling you, we need supervision.
It's too late
for us. Mr. Ballmer said, despite our best efforts, including raising our bid by roughly $5 billion, Yahoo has not moved towards accepting our offer. After careful consideration, we believe the economics demanded by Yahoo do not make sense for us, and it is in the best interest of Microsoft stockholders, employers, and other stakeholders to withdraw our proposal. Yahoo Chairman Roy Bostock responded, quote, from the beginning of this process, our independent board and our management have been steadfast in our belief that Microsoft's offer undervalued the company, and we are pleased that so many of our shareholders joined us in expressing that view, end quote. Microsoft presented Yahoo with a $44.6 billion unsolicited buyout offer in February after the internet search and advertising company reported disappointing earnings. Yahoo rejected the offer and continued to do so even after Mr. Ballmer presented the company with a chair and an ultimatum threatening a hostile takeover attempt, which it turns out was apparently a bluff.
Apparently. Oh, thanks for the wonderful visuals. All right, NBC is jumping back into the online media store game again, but instead of returning to the iTunes store, the network has teamed up with, yes, Microsoft's Zune online store.
you just can't write this stuff, man. You can't make this stuff up.
No, I mean, you can't create fiction this good. Oh, my. All right. As part of the deal, customers will be presented with bundled TV show purchases and variable pricing structure, which, by no small coincidence, is exactly what NBC was pressuring for before breaking up with Apple in the iTunes store. J.B. Perrette, president of NBC Universal Digital Distribution, commented, quote, "Partnering with Zune will allow us to develop innovative content offerings for their customers, including flexible pricing and packaging options beginning this fall," end quote. NBC parted ways with Apple after it refused to relinquish control over TV show pricing and force customers to purchase certain shows in bundles. Apple claimed that NBC wanted to charge customers too much, while NBC said that Apple was unfairly controlling the pricing structure. The Zune online store sells its content for Microsoft points that customers purchase in blocks. This is amazingly simple. It's just wonderful. Microsoft points that customers purchase in blocks, and each show will be priced at 160 points, or about $2. I think that's like $300 in metric.
I think he probably should have had another quote talking about this was the best way for them to maximize their abilities to reach the minimum amount of customers.
You know, it's all about lowest common denominator.
Or in this case, just low. Apple has been given a failing grade by Climate Counts and was placed at the bottom of a list of 12 electronics companies also ranked by the organization. Climate Counts ranks companies on their practices to reduce global warming on a scale of 0 to 100, and Apple was given a score of 11, some 66 points behind sector leader IBM, which scored a 77. In the second annual scorecard, Climate Counts evaluated 60 companies in 9 different categories. The companies are rated on publicly available information in regards to their own approach, efforts, and policies to reduce global warming. This includes not only the company's internal efforts, but also their external focus on the various supply chain channels and other partners. Climate Counts focuses on the publicly available aspect of the information. That's quote-unquote. It evaluates because it is aiming the scorecards at consumers whom Climate Counts look on as a powerful force in changing corporate policies and efforts in the global warming arena. It is perhaps that publicly available aspect of Climate Counts methodology that has had the biggest impact on Apple's score. As we mentioned above, Apple, a company famed for its secrecy, scored 11 out of 100, the lowest score of the 12 tech companies in that category, and less than a third the average score of 39.3 across all 60 companies evaluated. Apple scored a 0 in most of the areas Climate Counts rated the companies, especially and particularly in the areas of management and corporate policies on environmental issues. And that sound means it's time for the Context Machine. That's where Jeff and I delve a little more deeply into the news to provide context for what's going on. And, you know, we're fresh on it, Jeff. Why don't we start with Climate Counts?
That sounds great. And I have to start by saying, holy crap, that article was a mouthful.
Yeah, there's a lot of information to go over, that's for sure.
And, you know, and we were talking a little bit about this before we started the show. And so I'll jump in like in the middle of that conversation and say, I totally agree with you, Brian. Apple needs to be more open about what they're doing environmentally.
Yeah, I think that Apple should be a leader in this particular area. And that's for so many reasons. For one, electronics companies are responsible for a lot of the toxins that go into the environment. And manufacturing electronics of all sorts, not just computers, but, you know, all of the world of electronics, it takes a lot of energy. There's a pretty big carbon footprint that goes on this stuff. And my opinion as an Apple shareholder and as an Apple observer is that Apple should be a leader in this area. You know, they're one of the only computer companies making a profit on computer sales, and I think that there's enough room in there for them to take a lead on this because, damn it, it's important.
It is important, and you know, and you're right. Apple is a market leader. They are setting trends. So many other tech companies look to Apple for the lead to, you know, to see what's coming next, what the new trend is, all of that. So why not make one of those new trends to be open about your environmental policy and to be openly taking clear and proactive steps towards improving the way your company and your products interact and impact the environment?
Okay, and let's actually talk about that, because Apple has done a number of things in this area. They set up a recycling program. They moved the iMac line to be aluminum and glass, which is very easily recyclable. If you look on their environmental page, which I am flipping to now, we'll see that in 2008, the first MacBook with arsenic-free LCD display glass shipped. In 2007, the first MacBook Pro with mercury-free LED backlit display. I mean, the company has done a lot of different things, but that's why I focused. When I wrote the article, I tried to focus on the fact that a big part of what's hurting Apple in this particular scorecard from this particular organization, I think, is not only their secrecy, but their lack of public leadership.
You know, you see that in other parts of Apple's business as well. I mean, look at the – we've talked about this before. Look at the enterprise market. Apple has a hard time there because they hold their cards so close to their chest, it makes it difficult for corporations to plan out their buying budgets. Mm-hmm. And now you can see the same thing here in their environmental stance. They've made great steps, and I applaud Apple for the steps that they have made. And what I would really like to see is more openness about what they're doing environmentally, because once people can see more of what they're doing, then, well, of course, they're more accountable, which is a good thing, but then it makes it more important for other companies to follow suit. So take the lead.
Yeah, and well, let's look at what Climate Counts is doing. Their whole deal is basically focusing on the public aspect, as we said, publicly available information. They specifically won't look at information that you have to request as a shareholder, for instance.
That seems reasonable.
It does if you look at why they're doing it. Why they're doing it is they want consumers to be able to make choices on their purchases based upon environmental concerns. In other
right.
words, for those consumers who think that that is important, Climate Counts is offering a scorecard for those consumers. Now, you can argue about whether or not that is a valid approach, but what you can't do, and I'm responding a little bit here to the many Apple apologists that commented in our article, ripping into Climate Counts. You can't argue with that methodology. You can only offer for the reasons behind that methodology, because the methodology in this case matches their aim, and their aim is to get consumers the kind of information that they think those consumers want.
Sure.
And that is the free market at work. You know, this is absolutely and completely a laissez-faire capitalist approach towards enacting environmentally friendly corporate behavior, because this isn't legislation. This is information being provided for people to make their own decisions.
Right. And the information that this company is using to compile their ratings is based on everything that's available to me as a consumer.
Yes.
So,
or your mom.
Or my mom.
Would be a better example. Or my
right.
mom.
Well, that's true, because I can look a little deeper than the average person that's going
yeah,
out
that's
looking
what our,
for this
that's
stuff.
That's what our job is.
And then, of course, you can probably look a little deeper than I can, because you have Apple stock, so you're a shareholder. I do not. So I would assume that at some level, you might be able to get at things that I wouldn't.
Yeah, I could, as a shareholder, request something, some of which Apple may give me as a shareholder, some of which they might not. But the point here is that, you know, what Climate Counts is looking for are publicly available policies. For instance, our company has a target of reducing this by that.
Right.
And Apple doesn't have that. They're looking for management saying, our policy is to educate employees on environmental issues and offer them public transportation subsidies, which, by the way, a lot of companies here in Silicon Valley do. Apple happens to be one of them, and Apple actually got a that's one of the areas where Apple got a low score. I think it was 3 out of 11.
Interesting.
If I remember correctly, it was 3 out of 4. I'm looking. Yeah, Apple actually got a 3 out of 4 on that one. And I think part of that is the fact that they do have their public transportation subsidies and whatnot. So that's actually one of the things that Apple's doing well. But that's what Climate Counts is looking for. Climate Counts is also looking for whether or not companies are either for or opposed to legislation that tries to enact minimums or maximums emissions and you know, any kind of environmental legislation. Actually, Apple did not get dinged or gained from this because they're not supporting any legislation and they're not opposed to any legislation.
You know, the whole legislation thing, what a double-edged sword, because once you have the government regulating things, well, you never know what can go right or wrong. So, you know, that I get concerned about the legislation in that aspect. But on the other hand, without legislation, there's a lot of companies that simply would disregard the health and safety of the environment and their customers. So I get why we need to have it, but I wish we didn't need to have it.
Indeed. Well, let's look at some of the comments that we got on this article. Dave Barnes said, actions, not words. Look at Apple's actions. Words, and he uses Hillary Clinton and George Bush, don't count. Next person, who cares? Let's see. This is an anonymous person. I can buy innovative software, and I don't really care about the environment. I'm paraphrasing. Here's someone who's this is a longtime member, Alger, A-L-G-R, said, I've never heard of them, referring to Climate Counts. I wonder if some of these organizations are just invented for the purpose of attacking Al Gore. I actually don't think that's the case here. someone criticized that. Now, Climate Counts is actually funded by, I'm trying to look at the name.
Isn't it like a yogurt company?
Stonyfield Yogurt.
Okay.
And, they're the ones who actually provide the funding for Climate Counts. Someone criticized them for putting out yogurt containers. Hello, they're recyclable, you numbnut. That's what I said to that. What? That's so ridiculous. That's like, I hate Apple apologists. I just hate Apple apologists. I know that we have a lot of readers at the Mac Observer that are Apple apologists, and I don't care. I don't like you guys. I don't like anyone who's going to take anything and not look at it rationally and reasonably.
You know,
this is an area where Apple deserves criticism because they need to take more of a leadership role. And I'm saying that as an Apple observer, and I'm saying that as a very tiny Apple shareholder. Corporations must take a leadership role in the area of the environment. And I think that the scorecard's a good thing.
And, you know, and I don't care which company it is. Leaders need to lead. Period. And they need to set a good example. I don't care if it's Apple, if it's IBM, if it's Microsoft, it doesn't matter. Whoever is in a leadership position needs to be setting the pace for everyone else. And they need to do it in a good way.
Right. So yeah, let me take the devil's advocate approach, or at least somewhat of a devil's advocate approach. Climate Counts is not rating Apple on things like changing the iMac, although actually that was another area where Apple did get a few points. And I think it doesn't say specifically why they gave them those points. This would be, is the company made successful efforts to reduce GHG impacts, its greenhouse gas impacts associated with the use of its products and services. Apple got a 4 out of 4 on that. So that's publicly available information where Apple did well. And I think that moving the iMac to aluminum and glass is probably part of that. I think that the getting rid of mercury in the MacBook Pro and arsenic in the MacBook are also part of that because that's publicly available.
Right.
Right? But that's not the point of the Climate Count scorecard. The point of the Climate Count scorecard is to look mostly at publicly available information as regards to things such as policies and actions.
Right.
Right? That's what where Apple got dinged here. They're not saying that Apple is the least environmentally friendly company on the planet. What they're saying is that Apple needs to be doing a better job of being public about what they are doing and to step up to things that they aren't. And that's something that I personally agree with.
You know, I think Apple is doing a good job in comparison to a lot of other companies with their environmental stance. My feeling is they're probably doing better than we know simply because we don't get to see all the information, and that's the nature of Apple. So
I would agree with that. I
wish that would change.
If everything that Apple was doing in this area was being made available to the public, they probably would have scored higher on this particular scorecard. But keep in mind, too, this is just one thing. Now, I do think that Greenpeace was attacking Apple to get attention for themselves.
Oh, I'm absolutely certain of that.
But I think that this is a lot different than Greenpeace's thing. There was the other group, too. What was the iPod battery group?
Yes.
The guys that were protesting at the Macworld a couple of years ago?
Yes, I can't remember who they are, but
they yes. said as much that they picked Apple because Apple has a high profile. Now, that's bogus. That's a bad reason to be in this case to be attacking Apple. That's not the right reason. And that's just the thing. These guys aren't picking on Apple. They put a scorecard out for 60 different companies. And they published I don't know if I made this clear. Well, I did make it clear in the article, but each scorecard for each company was released. So you can see the exact rankings and ratings that they got in each of the questions. And there are detailed explanations as to, well, not actually, they're not detailed. There are general explanations of what each rating actually means.
Right. And the information that they put in the scorecards, I believe you already said this, is all information that they could verify as well.
Mm-hmm.
And that's a critical thing, because if you're going to be critical of companies and their actions, I really think you should be able to back it up. And that's one thing that sets this group apart from some of the others. It's not just going out looking for the spotlight. They had information to back up their claims.
Right. And
All right, so that said,
I didn't care for most of our reader comments on this article. I think that they're wrong. It's not that I don't care for them; it's I think that they're wrong. And I do think that this organization has got a pretty interesting approach to what they're doing. And I think that all of us should be paying a little more attention to it. There we go. Next topic.
All right. How about the international iPhone deals that started cropping up like a crazy rash over the last week?
Yeah, why do you think that is?
I think that's because Apple and Steve Jobs decided they wanted to specifically prove me wrong. And I think this is all because of me, because I've been saying for a while now, Apple is not releasing the new iPhone in June. They may announce it, but it will be fall before we see it. And so I think Steve Jobs heard that and he went, all right, it's time to screw Gamut, and we're going to release an iPhone in June, and we need to get everything in place. So not only do we release it in June, but we're releasing it all over the fracking world while we do it.
Okay, that is an interesting approach. I like it, too, because it's kind of like the approach I might take.
Excellent.
It's a very you-centered, you know, approach, and I definitely have empathy for that. I've got a slightly different take on it, though. Are you interested?
Sure. It's probably wrong because it's not Jeffio-centric, but, you know, I'll listen.
All right, so what I think is this. Most of the world is set up on 3G. They bypassed the whole edge thing altogether.
Right.
And I think that we're going to see a 3G iPhone, and I think that Apple is now able to get this phone into these markets, and so it is. And I think that they have probably found that it that it was becoming more of a pain in the butt than it was worth doing a country-by-country deal. And so they're being more flexible with their negotiating. Hence, you know, like this package deal with Vodafone and this package deal with the America Mobile.
Yeah, you know, okay, that's not centered on me, but that's probably still pretty accurate. And yeah, I think Apple is now in the position where they can push the product out to all of these markets because they will be releasing the technology that's compatible with what these markets offer. Mm-hmm. So they're blanketing now because they can.
And there's another issue too. With a 3G iPhone on the market, this opens up the gray market opportunities for the gray marketers.
Right.
So if Apple is not ready to move into those markets with some kind of a deal where they get some kind of a kickback from the carrier, they're going to lose, you know, hundreds and hundreds of thousands, maybe more, maybe millions of iPhone sales to the gray market where they don't make money from the carrier plans.
All right. Now, here's another interesting thing. The rumors have been cropping up that Apple may not get kickbacks from carriers. If that's the case, the gray market suddenly becomes a really great opportunity for Apple because they won't be losing any money because they wouldn't be making that money in other markets.
Maybe. And I know that those rumors have been kicking up. I think they're going to get something.
You know, I would be surprised if Apple isn't getting something. But, you know, considering the rumor has been out there for a little while, I thought it was worth tossing out just to see how quickly we chewed it up.
Yeah, it may not be the same deal that AT&T or O2 or T-Mobile is paying, but they're going to get something because it's Apple.
Right, and they live in a Apple-centric universe.
Yeah, Apple definitely has an Apple-centric universe with no joking whatsoever. So I think that, I think they're going to get something, and I think it just was a lot easier for them. You know, most of these markets are also very small markets.
Right.
Right. So, you know, this way Apple can avoid losing sales to the gray markets and can at the same time, you know, basically this was probably the quickest way to get deals in place in time for the new iPhone, which I think is going to be released now in June. I thought it was going to be announced in June, too, by the way. I think that Steve was out to prove both of us wrong.
Yeah. Why does he do that to us?
Oh, I don't know. Why I ought to.
Yeah, you ought to cut his salary is what you ought to do.
Speaking of salary, that's a great segue. Oh,
thank you.
Very nice.
Thank you. Thank you.
Very nice. Let's talk about those old that old salary thing. You know, this was another thing that Jeff and I were talking about before we started recording because this has been something that I've been hot about for a long time. And
yeah, like for years.
For 2001, I think, was my first column about this, and that's when Steve Jobs first basically had a bunch of options granted to him that vested over a long period of time, and everybody was using him as an example of CEO excesses.
Right. Right.
And my problem with that is that every time this has happened, the grants have been isolated to the year either that they were granted or when they vested.
So it looks like a case of using the facts to best support whatever argument you want to put forward.
Absolutely it is. Because if you have grants that vest over 5 years or over 3 years, you can't look at the value of that entire grant just in the year that it was given, because really it's compensation for either prior years or future years or sometimes both.
Right. So in that case, just to make sure I've got it straight, if you're going to look at that vested stock option, that what you need to do is look at how much of it is applied to the prior years and then essentially amortize it across those years.
Yeah, at least in my opinion. If you're going to be talking about issues such as CEO compensation excess, yes, you need. If you're going, this is an important issue you know, the issue of how much CEOs are making is actually an issue that is part and parcel to the separation between the rich and the poor, at least in the United States.
You know, maybe...
Right? So there's...
Oh, go ahead. Please, you're on a roll. Go.
So that discussion, to me, is a very valid discussion for people to engage in. Because, you know, what we're seeing is this widening gulf between the rich and the poor, and between what, you know, it used to be like the CEO averaged something like 50 times or 20 times or something to that effect what the average employee of that company made. And now we're looking at hundreds of multipliers between the employees and the CEOs. And, you know, that's the when the rich become too rich, what we've seen all throughout time is that the people eventually get their revenge on that. And, you know, that's why a healthy society, and I'm not some kind of expert in this particular area, but that won't stop me from talking about it. Let me just get back to the point. This is an issue to be talked about, but if you're going to talk about it, use the right damn numbers. So, for instance, Steve Jobs gets $646 million worth of grants that vest in 2006. Well, that's not $646 million that year. That's $200 million a year over the last 3 years. Now, if you want to talk about $200 million a year being too much compensation, that's fine. Talk about that. But don't talk to me about him getting $646 million a year because he didn't make anything the 2 years before that. Or in 2001, he didn't make anything between 1997 and 2001 except for the stock options that he got in 2001. So in that case, it was actually covering 5 years. So, you know, if you're going to discuss this, just discuss it with the right numbers. That's all I want.
Okay, and just so you know, your figures for some of those years were off by $1. Because don't forget, he got $1 salary.
Yes, and he got health insurance.
Oh, he did. That's right. That's
a parking space.
Oh, in a parking space?
Yeah. And the jet. Steve Jobs has been given a lot of compensation. And it is a very valid discussion to discuss whether or not that is too much compensation. But if you're going to discuss it, use the correct numbers. Look at how much he's made in stock options and whatnot from the time he started working and today. And like another little this was true back in 2001. The guy was talking about Steve Jobs' stock grant, which vested at that point, and how, you know, it was worth how much money it was worth that day. And he's talking about the hundreds of millions of dollars that represented, while completely ignoring the fact that when the options were granted, they were worth 1/8 of that amount because of the rise in stock price, which is what Steve Jobs as CEO is supposed to do, is increase shareholder value.
Right. And so in that case, he reaped the rewards of his efforts.
Yes. And so did we as shareholders.
Right, and since he's a shareholder, great. Then he gets to take in some of the benefits of that as well. So in that case, good for him.
Yeah, good for him. And so again, let me just be clear on this. I'm not saying that no one should be criticizing how much Steve Jobs makes. I'm just saying if you're going to do it, use the right damn numbers. That's what I'm saying.
You know, you brought up one thing when we were talking before we started recording, which was if the shareholders were given a vote. Do you want to keep paying Steve Jobs what he makes, or do you want to get rid of him? That odds are the shareholders would say, keep paying him because this is good for us.
Yeah. Yeah. How much has the stock gone up since he took over?
A lot.
A lot and then some.
Yeah.
And so, I mean, you know, and again, you know, man, I think that society owes itself the discussion of how much we're paying our CEOs. But, you know, it's kind of a catch-22 because, you know, the reality is that the money exists. So, you know, if company A doesn't pay their great CEO X amount of money, then he's going to go to company B.
Right, because they will pay him.
Who will pay him. So this is kind of how that's happened. And it's, you know, there are no easy solutions on this particular area, but And I don't think we're going to solve it today, but yeah. So, you know, Steve has made a lot of money since he came to Apple in the form of stocks. But
yeah, he has.
Almost all of that money has been in the process of creating shareholder value, which again is his job.
Right. Yeah, that's very true. And, you know, so in that case, I say good for him, because he's increasing the value of the company for everyone, not just himself.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, speaking of monkey boys, let's move on to the NBC going to the... Wait, here's my quote for that. I can't remember. Did I actually say this during the news? Did I use my quote about the... Maximizing, I did.
Yes, you did. Yes.
Their ability to reach the minimum number of customers, which is great PR fake speech.
Yes, it is. And by the way, I totally loved your initial quote before you turned on your Babelfish translator.
Thank you. Thank you. Thank you very much.
I mean, you even had his accent correct. That was fantastic.
I think it's pretty funny. You know, this was an ill-conceived buyout offer from the beginning. It was ill-conceived. It was a stupid plan. It was a stupid plan put into action by apparently an inept executive group over at Microsoft. That's what I think.
You know, I've said this before. I don't know if I've said it on a podcast yet, but I've said it in many places. I really think that Steve Ballmer is a big bully. And I think that he uses...
Oh, wait. You know what we're doing? We've mixed up our NBC Zune and Yahoo thing.
Oh, we did.
Wow. I'm sorry. Well, let's go ahead and talk about the Yahoo thing quickly, and then we'll spend a short amount of time on the NBC deal like we were going to in the first place.
All right.
Sorry about that, folks. We're back on track now, sort of. So, yes.
Yes. Jeff, all right. I was saying that I think that Steve Ballmer is actually a big bully, and he intimidates people and companies into doing what he wants. And in this case, Yahoo stood up and told the bully on the playground to pack sand, and then he waffled because he had no idea how to respond to that. You know, his intimidation tactics didn't work, so then he threw out more hollow threats. And Yahoo didn't buy those threats, and everything just fell apart around him. And I think that this shows a serious lack of leadership skills on the part of Steve Ballmer.
Yeah, I would agree. I think that Microsoft was at its finest, at least in terms of business, not in terms of software, when the Bill Gates was at the helm. And I don't think that Steve Ballmer is truly equipped to be CEO of the company, just to be honest. I think this is a fine example of that. Not only was it an ill-conceived idea to begin with, but the bad implementation is really bad for Microsoft. It makes Microsoft look silly.
Yes, it
and,
does.
You know, and this no doubt cost the company millions of dollars in terms of man hours. Millions
oh, no
of
doubt.
Dollars. You know, especially if you consider how much Steve Ballmer's time is rightly worth, you know, just all the lawyers and, you know, everything. It's millions and millions of dollars this cost. And it was, I mean, they shouldn't have even done it in the first place. The buying Yahoo is just a stupid, anyway, it was a stupid idea. Let's get back to the Zoom.
So speaking of stupid ideas, how about NBC and Zoom?
Yeah, that's funny.
Yeah, you know, to me, this is just another example of NBC's anything but Apple stance right now.
Yeah, anything, we will stick a needle in our own eye. Just keep, you know, as long as we don't have to shake hands with Apple. Because they're too good at what they do, and we can't let them have that power.
Right. And, you know, the quote that they threw out with all of this, I just mm-hmm. I had to laugh when I read it, because it was clear that this quote was not a little soundbite to show the all three of the Zune owners out there that they have their best interests at heart. This was clearly to thumb their nose at Apple.
Oh yeah. Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. And you know, NBC shareholders should be up in arms about this crap, because the NBC not being on iTunes is bad for NBC. It is just for them.
You know,
and this is an area where I think that Apple is right. Apple's one pricing fits all strategy has been a winner, and it is a solid, solid idea.
It is.
And, you know, the labels don't like it and the studios don't like it, but that's because they are so used to being able to do things for what's good for them as opposed to what their consumers want. And I think that that you know, Apple's whole approach to iTunes pricing is a part of why it is so big, and you cannot divorce that success from the ways that it got that success.
That's right. And you have all of these consumers out there that created the success. So that's a very big statement from consumers, and the studios, the record labels, TV, radio, it doesn't matter. All of these content creators and distributors need to pay attention to what the consumers are saying, because they're sending a very clear message about how they want their content. And it's not variable pricing, make me buy 5 shows to get the one that I want stuff. They want to be able to say, I want that show. This is what it costs. Great. And they buy it and watch it.
Now, I will take the devil's advocate position, which is and I've said this before, so, you know, you guys have heard this before, but the price for TV shows out of the gate should have been $2.99, not $1.99.
Yeah, I think if Apple had set the price higher in the beginning, people would have been fine with that. I think if they try and raise it now, people will balk.
Yeah, no one would have blinked an eye at $2.99.
No.
You know, you buy a 4-minute song for 99 cents, or, you know, an hour long drama for $2.99, no one's going to blink an eye.
Right. And but yeah, now they can't raise that without really pissing off a lot of people.
Yeah, they could. They'll have to at some point.
Right, but I just don't want it
especially
to be right
now. Especially
with
the dollar falling.
Yeah. All right, so this is a personal vested interest on my part. I don't want Apple to raise TV show prices right now, because I've fallen in love with the Showtime series Dexter, and I don't have Showtime. So I don't want to have to pay more for the series when season 2 comes out. And by the way, if any of our listeners are into Dexter and have seen season 2, don't tell me anything. I don't want any spoilers.
Yeah, I can't. I love Dexter. It was a great show, but the catch people up there, Dexter is about a serial killer who actually works in a police station. He's a sociopath.
Yeah, he's a blood spatter expert, and he's also a serial killer. But the twist is he kills people that deserve it, the really, really bad guys that manage to slip through the legal cracks.
Yeah, the other serial killers, the serial rapists, the child abusers. So that's how he has channeled his own serial killing, and that's how he rationalizes it. Actually, he doesn't need to rationalize it, because he's a sociopath.
Right. Right. He channels it, so yeah, there you go. And
it's a great show, but if the torture scenes freak me out, man. My wife and I had to stop watching, or I stopped watching, and I think she did too, because we were just too freaked out by the torture scenes. I don't like too much empathy or something, but I don't like seeing people tortured when it looks realistic, and that stuff just was freaking me out. We had to stop watching it, which is a drag, because it's a great show.
It really is a great show, and maybe that says something about me, because I was able to watch every scene in every episode of season 1, and there were times where I went, oh no, that's not right, but I didn't actually have to shut it off ever.
Right. Now, you know, we are kind of running late, so we should probably get to the quick tip and end the show.
We should. And, you know, this is a problem that we have. We're both talkers, and it's in our nature. So, you know, I've learned to accept the fact that, well, I just can't shut up.
Yeah, well, actually, I will not shut up, too. And one more thing to our people before we do the quick tip. We're about to resume music reviews at iPod Observer. If there is something that you want to see reviewed, shoot us a note at AWR, MacObserver.com, and let us know what it is, because we're really interested in actually, you know, tapping into our reader and listener interests musically.
I think that sounds like a great idea. All right, so on to the quick tip. All right, so this week I'm going to talk about Quick Look again because to me it's just one of the coolest features in Leopard, really. And so this week I'm going to talk about images. And yes, you can select an image, or tap the space bar, and then look at the image in Quick Look. That's something that most people know. What most people don't realize, though, is that you can select a group of images, tap the space bar, and then look at a group of images at once. So what'll happen is you'll see the image, the first image in your group, and then you can just, you know, click through. There's like a little play button so you can move forward through all the images. But what I really like is that there's actually an index sheet button. It looks like four squares grouped together. Mm-hmm. If you click that, you can look at all of the images at the same time.
Now, that's very, very handy for, you know, like wading through birthday pictures and wedding pictures and vacation pictures and
exactly
and doing stuff quickly. That's fantastic.
Exactly. Or if you're like a designer and you have a CD full of images that a client has given you and you need to pick the right one, select them all, hit the space bar, tap the index sheet button, and then go through them that way.
That makes sense. And the one thing that it will never be used for, ever, porn.
No, why would anyone do that?
No, never.
No, ever. Well, okay, keep in mind that no one is actually finding porn on the internet anyhow.
Well,
so,
that's true.
Yeah, so, you know, why would... Wow. Okay. All right.
And so you can find the quick tip. We have it linked in the show notes, and it's got screenshots for you to be able to see exactly what Jeff is talking about. It's another fantastic quick tip, and thanks for showing it to us.
Sure. Okay. And here's just real quick. Here's a bit of trivia about the quick tip. The pictures that I used are pictures that my dad took his junior and senior year in high school.
I was wondering what they are. I'm looking at them, and it's like definitely 1962,
58, I believe, 1958.
I'm off. All right, 58. Take us out, man.
All right. If you have anything to comment on, add, or question, send your audio or text comments to awr@macobserver.com. And remember, succinctness is next to steveliness. And that's this week's Apple Weekly Report. Thanks for listening, and thanks for sending us your comments and feedback.
Our content is written by the good people at the Mac Observer and iPodObserver.com. Our bandwidth is provided by CashFly. You know, we say that, and we just run right over it. But thanks, CashFly. Thank you very much. Bases by Boom, recorded for TMO, and that's all for this week.
And as always, stay subscribed.
We'll see you online at the Mac Observer and iPodObserver.com.